Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, May 1st, 2014. As international pressure mounts for a peaceful solution in South Sudan, government and rebels hold direct talks in Addis Ababa.
So the parties would negotiate for an interim or a transitional period, and which might lead them into the establishment of a national unity government for the interim period.
And South Sudanese civil service employees say they are not celebrating Labor Day because they don't have the money.
There is no salary, so someone cannot afford to buy a time to load and to call one of the relative around or to call friend. So it is very hard to communicate with each other because of money. There is no money.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. After several delays, South Sudan's warring factions resume face-to-face peace talks in the Ethiopian capital today. It is the third such effort so far this year. The resumption of the negotiations coincides with U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry's meeting with regional leaders in Addis Ababa, where they agreed on the need for legitimate force to stabilize South Sudan. Mata Vandoff has more from Addis Ababa.
Pressure is growing on the South Sudan government and the opposition to reach some concrete agreements at this round of talks in Ethiopia. Since the conflict erupted in mid-December, the parties have only agreed on a ceasefire, which has been largely ignored. Siyum Mesfin, chairman of the East African Bloc IGAD mediation team, says an interim political arrangement is one of the items on the agenda.
Which envisages that the parties would negotiate for an interim or a transitional period, and which might lead them into the establishment of a national unity government for the interim period. The time frame for the interim period and the nature of the national unity government, its size, and its tasks during the interim period, these have to be negotiated by the parties.
IGAD says it is not imposing this upon the two negotiating parties, but both sides have accepted to negotiate on this topic. South Sudan Information Minister Michael McQuay says all outstanding issues will be discussed.
The first point in the agenda tomorrow is the strengthening of the cessation of hostilities and the commitment or a dedication to the implementation and operationalization of the cessation of hostilities.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry met with his counterparts from Ethiopia, Uganda, and Kenya Thursday in Addis Ababa on ways to facilitate an agreement. All agreed on the need for a legitimate force to be deployed. In addition, the United States has put into place a mechanism to apply travel bans or freeze assets if needed on individuals deemed as perpetuating the violence in South Sudan. IGAD has also recently deployed monitoring and verification teams on the ground in Bor, Malakal, and Bentiu. It has been 3 weeks since the last round of talks took place. Siyum Mesfin has made it clear that he wants both parties to produce concrete results.
More killings have taken place in the country after the signing of the cessation of hostilities than before. This is lack of commitment on both parties. The region, the IGAD region and the international community are saying enough is enough to this sort of breaching of agreement.
Fighting in South Sudan erupted after President Salva Kiir accused his former vice president Riek Machar of a coup. The violence has left thousands dead and more than a million displaced. More people will be affected soon as a famine is looming in the country. Most farmers could not plant their fields before the upcoming rain season because of the security situation. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Secretary Kerry is warning of the risk of genocide in South Sudan if 4 months of deadly fighting there is not stopped. VOA State Department correspondent Scott Stans is traveling with Secretary and says Kerry discussed the violence with regional foreign ministers and African Union officials today in Addis Ababa.
Secretary Kerry says those responsible for what he calls unspeakable violence in South Sudan must be brought to justice to prevent the conflict from deteriorating further.
There are very disturbing leading indicators of the kind of ethnic, tribal, targeted, nationalistic killings taking place that raise serious questions, and were they to continue in the way that they've been going, could really present a very serious challenge to the international community with respect to the question of genocide.
Kerry says he's working with regional leaders to avoid that by moving to put people on the ground who can begin to make a difference, separating people and providing security. He met here in Addis Ababa with foreign ministers from Ethiopia, Kenya, and Uganda, who he says all agree on the need for African troops under a United Nations mandate. He also pushed them to join U.S. moves toward a travel ban and assets freeze on those responsible for the violence, but said Washington is absolutely prepared to move on its own.
We may well move on our own, but each of the foreign ministers today accepted the responsibility for also doing sanctions.
Kerry says some of the violence is the responsibility of individual generals with their own agenda. But the place to start is the place where it started, and that's with South Sudan's President Salva Kiir and his former Vice President Riek Machar. The most serious fighting began in late December, soon after the Kiir government accused Machar of trying to seize power. While a senior State Department official says Washington does not buy into the narrative of a coup attempt, Kerry says there is a clear distinction between the men, whose personal anger is fueling this violence.
The current president of South Sudan is the elected constitutional president of a country. And Mr. Machar is a rebel who is trying to unconstitutionally take power by force. And there is a clear distinction. There is no equivalency between the two.
Kerry says Machar needs to think clearly about that, particularly in the wake of allegations that ethnic Nuer rebels killed hundreds of civilians in the town of Bentiu last month. A UN report says the rebels separated individuals of certain nationalities and ethnic groups and escorted them to safety while the others were killed. A rebel spokesman has denied that allegation. Scott Stearns, VOA News, Addis Ababa.
U.S. Republican lawmakers are blasting President Obama for not doing more to end the bloodshed in South Sudan, which they say resembles what happened in Rwanda 20 years ago. Congressman Frank Wolf is calling on Mr. Obama to send former Presidents George W. Bush and Bill Clinton to South Sudan to end the violence and help negotiate a lasting peace. Carol Van Damme has more from Washington.
At a sparsely attended news conference on Capitol Hill, Virginia Congressman Frank Wolf relayed reports of civilians, including women and children, indiscriminately being targeted and killed, of houses of worship turned from places of sanctuary into mass graves. He displayed graphic photos, including one blown up to poster size, of a pile of bodies from the recent massacre in Bentiu. Wolf, the chairman of the House International Relations Committee, called on President Obama to act now.
President Obama, you must not allow this to continue. Call on your predecessors to immediately engage in a crisis before more innocent blood is shed. President Obama, failure to act will be a stain on your administration and a blot on your conscience.
Wolf says the president has had plenty of information for months about the deteriorating conditions in South Sudan.
Cables were sent, reports of the violence and the target of innocents received, and yet the American foreign policy apparatus was largely consumed not with stemming the bloodshed, but rather with avoiding the use of the word genocide, lest it necessitate a response.
Wolf was joined at the podium by fellow Republican Chris Smith of New Jersey, chairman of the House Congressional Panel that oversees global human rights. He says he posed this question to the White House staff.
Has President Obama called Salva Kiir? And they said no. They wasn't sure what the right time might be. We're talking about our president calling the freely elected president of South Sudan and saying, we want to work overtime to stop this bloodshed.
He says Mr. Obama should be working hard to solve the crisis, and yet he's seen nothing to indicate that's happening. He agrees with Wolf that sending Presidents Clinton and Bush to South Sudan is a great idea.
The cowboy hat that Salva Kiir wears all the time, practically, was given to him by President Bush. Making, there's a bond there. Well, deploy him. He'll go.
But not everyone believes sending two elder U.S. statesmen will end the violence. Magdi El-Ghazouli is a longtime South Sudan analyst and research associate at the University of Freiburg, Germany.
I'm not sure if just sending former presidents is what is required. Probably sending people with current office would be more effective. And also adding to that some sort of idea on how such a solution would look like. Not just the idea that the two contenders in this game, Kiir and Machar, should reconciliate.
El-Ghazouli says trying to get Mr. Kiir and Machar to reconcile should not be the objective. He says whether it's the former president, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, who is on his way to South Sudan, or anyone else who tries to intervene, the primary message should be that they cannot come out winners of this endgame.
Whatever the political future is, both of them, it shouldn't be guaranteed that they would push their own country into war and then come out winning.
Secretary Kerry is expected to arrive in Juba before the end of his trip. I'm Carol Van Dam for VOA News in Washington.
A prominent member of the African Union's Commission of Inquiry on South Sudan is confident the group will devise recommendations to resolve the country's crisis after meeting with President Salva Kiir and former Vice President Riek Machar. African Union member Justice Sophia Kafu tells reporter Peter Clotty the group wants to ascertain the underlying causes of the conflict, which has left at least 10,000 people dead.
We've already done one exploratory visit to South Sudan, so we can observe firsthand what the situation is. We met with the president and even with the former vice president of South Sudan. We also sounded out civil society, church groups, just to get a feel of the place and then to begin to understand the underlying causes of all this, because situations like this don't arise just by themselves. There's always causation. And so that's what we went to do. But our mandate really is to investigate and come up with solutions that will assure justice, will also assure accountability in all respects of that word, including even reconciliation and so on and so forth.
There are some people in Africa and the international community who have expressed concern that the African Union appeared to have been a little too slow to help with resolving this problem, especially when it has been backing the IGAD mediated talks between the two warring factions. What is the Commission's stance when you hear criticisms of such nature?
African Union has been, that I'm aware of, they've been fervently been supporting the work of IGAD. And it is just unfortunate that sometimes when you're seeking peace through mediation, sometimes things might blow up. But even those talks are still going on, even whilst we've been here in Addis. And as part of their work, we will also have some interactions, at least with the Secretariat of the IGAD and some of the member states as well.
When you met both the president and the former vice president, Riek Machar, the two warring factions, what was the interaction like? What are the prospects of peace? And did you get a sense of what is really going on, the fundamental root cause of this problem that will enable the commission to come up with recommendations about how to resolve this conflict?
I cannot go into much details about what we discussed, but certainly both expressed themselves willing to cooperate with the commission and also were willing to give us their side of what the root causes of the problem as they see it. I cannot really give you the details of those, not yet, because we haven't even reported yet to those who appointed us.
Justice Sophia Akufo is a leading member of the African Union Commission of Inquiry on South Sudan. She spoke with reporter Peter Clodi from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
In recent years, Africans have made progress in the fight against HIV/AIDS. Prevention programs, new medicines, and changes in behavior have brought infection rates down dramatically. But this success could be in danger if people are not careful about sexual activity. Those displaced from their homes by war and civil unrest are at a greater risk of sexual violence, which can spread the disease. Advice and information are available from health centers in many areas. So understand the risks, take precautions, and protect yourself from HIV/AIDS.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese civil service employees say they are too broke to celebrate the Labor Day.
You don't want to miss VOA's South Sudan in Focus. You can hear us on one of our FM affiliate stations around the country or on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. In Juba, listen to South Sudan in Focus at 8 p.m. on 93.5. You can also find us on shortwave at 11995, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what should governments do about reducing poverty?
Start implementing the stuff they actually like, the policies and all the things they should start implementing, because South Africa apparently has some of the best policies, like overall, but then they just don't implement stuff. So
I think the government should create infrastructures like roads, schools, hospitals and all that stuff in order to help other people to get jobs, opportunities, yeah?
The government or our leaders, what they need to do, they need to sit down and bring peace to the country.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The rainy season has come to Juba, and aid agencies are warning that tens of thousands of people crowded into a displacement camp in the capital are at severe risk. But some of the people in the camp say they do not feel comfortable moving, even if new space is made available. Andrew Green has the story for VOA from Juba.
Every time it rains, Niabwok Dup's small shelter collapses. And it is now raining several times a week in Juba.
When the rain comes, immediately houses fall down. Where I stay is a place that collects so much water. The water comes and collects directly in our house.
Dup is one of more than 20,000 people crowded into a camp set up at the United Nations base in an area called Tomping, near the city's airport. She fled to the base the day after fighting broke out in mid-December. With the help of some family members, she built a small shelter out of cardboard and plywood in one of the camp's low-lying areas. She says after every rainstorm, stagnant water collects and remains inside the home for days. The emergency medical group, Doctors Without Borders, has warned that the people living in the Tomping camp are in serious danger of contracting a disease or an infection. Stefan Liliegren is the field coordinator for the NGO, known by its French acronym MSF.
Tomping is a very, very crowded refugee camp. People are living in very, very tough conditions in low-lying areas, very prone to stagnant water, and as soon as it rains, there's a lot of water in this camp, and the health risk is just very, very high.
Liliegren says they are seeing more than 200 patients a day at the outpatient clinic MSF has set up inside the camp. More than half of them are sick with problems either caused by or exacerbated by the standing water, including skin and respiratory infections. Peter Bong Chol, a health promoter in the camp, says there is the possibility for much worse. He visits dozens of families each day to encourage people to wash their hands and use toilets stationed around the camp in an effort to avoid getting sick. But he says it's not always possible.
It's suffering always, but at night, maybe we have diarrhea, there is no go-to latrine. It is very far.
Chol says instead people have no choice but to defecate on the ground, which can then be washed back into living areas during a storm. MSF and other aid agencies are warning that this has the potential to speed an outbreak of cholera, though the disease has not yet been reported. Despite the risks, Dupe says she has no plans to leave Tongping, even though the rains are only going to increase. She says there is no place for her to go.
I'm not comfortable to go outside because I witnessed some people. They go outside this camp. When they reach their home, they were attacked. I'm now very afraid.
MSF has called on the UN to open up land that is on higher ground within the camp, or to speed up the building of a new campsite on the outskirts of Juba. UN officials say the new site should open before the end of May. For VOA News, I am Andrew Green in Juba.
Officials in Upper Nile State say life in the state capital, Malakal, is beginning to return to normal after government forces retook control of the town last month. They say hundreds of residents have returned to the town and to other parts of the state and are slowly reopening shops and businesses. Charlton Doki reports on how Malakal is coming back to life.
State Information Minister Philip Jiben Ogal says thousands of people who fled Malakal during the peak of the fighting for control of the town are beginning to return. He says that normal life is also returning in many other towns in the state, even though there have been clashes recently in parts of Upper Nile.
I want to assure you that Upper Nile, the situation is quite normal. People, they start to come back to the towns. And also, I want to assure you that 98% is under control. So the situation is normal and security is normal and people, they resume the work in Upper Nile State.
Many residents of Malakal lost their homes or businesses as fighting raged around Upper Nile, the biggest oil-producing state in South Sudan, Jiben says. The town has changed hands between government and opposition forces at least 5 times since the country erupted into violence in December. The mobile phone network and state-owned radio station, which were both destroyed during the fighting, are still not back up and running, Jiben says. But returning residents are clearing the town of some of the grim reminders of the fighting and getting ready to reopen any shops and other businesses that are still standing.
They are still cleaning the towns now of the bones of the people because the rain season is coming. So maybe next week people they will come because when the shop will be clean because they are trying to bring the goods from the northern Upper Nile, which is Arang and Kodok.
Until the town and shops are cleaned up and ready to resume business, enterprising traders have set up a temporary market near the UN base in Malakal, where thousands of people have sought shelter from fighting in the town.
There is some goods in the market there. There is sugar, there is oils, and also the onion. So everything is available.
Jiben says commodity prices are higher than before the fighting started, because the few traders bringing goods into the area say they have to pay more to get fresh produce and other items into Upper Nile. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has called for talks between Kiev and pro-Russian separatists in southeastern Ukraine. He said Russia believes that this dialogue between the authorities in Kiev and their opponents could be established or launched in the framework of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. We hope that our partners, our Western colleagues, allow Ukrainians to establish this dialogue without major impediment. The Prime Minister spoke during a visit to Peru. Polling stations have closed their doors across Iraq after the first vote since the U.S. withdrawal in 2011. The preliminary counting and sorting began immediately after the closure of polling stations last evening. Polls opened under tight security, with voters choosing from among 9,000 candidates for the 328-seat parliament. Despite the massive police turnout and a vehicle ban in Baghdad, election-related violence left at least 12 people dead across the country. And finally, a suicide attack in northeastern Afghanistan has killed at least 13 people, including 6 policemen. The governor of Panjshir province, Abdul Rahman Karimi, told VOA's Afghanistan service that 4 attackers detonated a vehicle full of explosives at a busy checkpoint today. More than 20 other people were wounded in the blast, some critically. The 4 attackers were also killed. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
As South Sudan joins the rest of the world in marking Labor Day today, some civil servants say it is not much a celebration for them since they have not been paid for the last 4 months. They say they can no longer afford to feed their families. For VOA News, Philip Aleu reports from Juba.
Brown Akol teaches in a government-owned school. He says he has not been paid for the last 3 months. He says the only payment he has received so far this year was for the month of January, and that arrived in late March.
There is no salary, so someone cannot afford to buy a time to load and to call one of the relative around or to call friend. So it is very hard to communicate with each other because of money. There is no money.
Akol says Labor Day means nothing to him because he does not have money to spend on a public holiday. SPLA soldier Jolly Nyok says he has not received his wages for the last 4 months. The 60-year-old soldier who fought during the Liberation War without any pay says he now expects the government of independent South Sudan to pay its civic servants, including soldiers.
I had suffered for 42 years as a soldier, and I have not got any benefit. Everything is difficult to understand, and what I have resorted to is to see the sun rising in the east and setting in the west. But what is urgent now is to give us our salary at the end of every month. There is nothing more than this.
Nyok says the government has a duty to promptly pay the salaries of public workers who have dedicated their lives to serve the nation. Justin Jada, a public relations officer at the Ministry of Labor, says delays in payments of civil servant salaries in South Sudan was a problem long before the fighting broke out in December. Jada says the Labor Ministry should not be blamed for delayed payments because it worked hand in hand with the Finance Ministry, which is responsible for disbursing salaries to all South Sudanese civil servants.
Even me who is speaking to you now, I did not receive my salary for March. And some people did not receive their salaries for February. The Ministry of Labor is working on the pay sheets. They just approve the pay sheet and then the Ministry of Finance facilitates the payment. This is a usual thing in this country that salaries don't come in time. But it doesn't mean that the people in the Ministry of Labor don't want to pay people their salaries. It depends on the Ministry of Finance if they have money or not.
Thousands of civic servants have not been paid for months. The Finance Ministry says it is paying loans taken during the oil shutdown. For BOA News, I am Philip Aleu. In Juba.
That will do for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Musica Loca Qua by Victoria Ole.
Ole na yolo.
We have been listening to Victoria Ole with that song in her native Kakwa language. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening, and we will see you back here tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.